listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. This past December marked 16 years since President George W. Bush made the following announcement at the White House Rose Garden.
I've just concluded a meeting of my National Security Council. We reviewed what I've discussed with my friend, President Vladimir Putin, over the course of many meetings and many months, and that is the need for America to move beyond the 1972 anti-ballistic missile treaty.
Then President Bush made the announcement in the months following the September 11th, 2001 attacks against the World Trade Center and Pentagon. But as you just heard, he had contemplated withdrawal from the treaty long before that.
The 1972 ABM treaty was signed by the United States and the Soviet Union at a much different time in a vastly different world. One of the signatories, the Soviet Union, no longer exists. And neither does the hostility that once led both our countries to keep thousands of nuclear weapons on hair trigger alert, pointed at each other.
That context, of course, no longer applies, with the days of moonlight and canoes a distant memory in relations between Moscow and Washington. Instead, we now live in a world where U.S. and NATO troops regularly drill on Russia's borders from the Baltics to the Korean Peninsula. Moscow has repeatedly warned that a response would be forthcoming. On Thursday, its president, Vladimir Putin, made the following announcement.
Colleagues, we see increased opportunities with the armed forces. Today, we've done a lot to strengthen our army and our navy. Our armed forces are equipped with modern weaponry today. The level of the rate of modern weaponry increased by 3.7 times. We've adopted 300 new models of weaponry, providing our armed forces with 80 new ICBMs, 102 submarine-based ballistic missiles. We've commissioned three new nuclear submarines of the Borei class, 12 ballistic missile regiments have been equipped with Yars missiles. We've increased the number of high-precision long-range missiles by a factor of 12. And Aerospace forces, our ground forces, and our navy have significantly increased their capabilities. The entire country, the entire world is familiar today with the names of our newest air defense systems, fighter jets, land-based systems. These are new high-precision weapon systems developed in recent years. Russia's borders, and this is very important, we have a network of radars. We had the system during the Soviet years, but then after the Soviet Union disintegrated, it was lost. Now we were able to restore it. We have now a new command in the Far East. The number of contract soldiers increased by 2.4 times, and we've increased our military units are now manned at over 90%. The waiting period for military housing has been reduced by a factor of 6. And now the most important thing for this section, for defense, I'll talk about our newest systems of strategic weaponry that we have created as our response to the U.S. unilaterally withdrawing from the ABM treaty and deploying this system in the U.S. and also in other countries around the world. I would like to go back to history. In 2000, the United States told us about its plans to withdraw from the ABM treaty. Russia objected to this categorically. We believed that the treaty, the ABM 1972 treaty, was a cornerstone in the international security architecture. According to this treaty, both sides was entitled to having just one area protected against a missile attack. Russia deployed this system around Moscow and the U.S. around Grand Fox area where they had their missiles. This treaty created an atmosphere of trust between our countries and also protected us against the unilateral use of nuclear weapons by one of the two sides. This would make the aggressor vulnerable to a retaliatory strike, so we talked to the Americans, persuading them not to upset the strategic balance, but it didn't help. In 2002, the United States unilaterally withdrew from the ABM treaty, and for a long time after that, we tried to have a constructive dialogue with the Americans. We suggested working together in this area, and at a certain point, it seemed to me that we could achieve a compromise, but no. All our proposals were rejected. Then we said that in order to ensure our security, we'll have to improve our modern strike capabilities. In response, they said that the United States were not developing missile defense capabilities against Russia. So it's up to you. You can do what you want. We'll just believe that you're not doing this against the United States. Where did this come from? Basically, it's obvious. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, Russia, which they identified with the Soviet Union, this is what they called it in the West, the Soviet Russia, they said, speaking about our national borders. Russia lost 23.8% of its territory, 48.5% of its population, 41% of GDP, 39.4% of its industrial potential, almost half, 44.6% of the defensive capabilities, because the armed forces of the Soviet Union were divided between former Soviet republics. Our modern military equipment was obsolete, and the armed forces were in a pitiful condition. So we had a civil war going on in the Caucasus, and our leading uranium enrichment facilities had U.S. inspectors working there. And at a certain point, it was a big question whether we will be able to develop strategic weaponry at all, whether some even asked whether Russia was capable of servicing nuclear weapons we inherited from the Soviet Union. Russia was deep in debt and unable to fund its armed forces, and our partners probably believed that the resurgence of the economy and the defense sector of the economy of our country would be impossible in the near future. And thus, there was no need to take Russia's views into consideration. They decided that they should push forward and achieve unilateral dominance so they can dictate their will in all the other areas as well. This position, this kind of logic, is understandable based on the reality we had back then. It's our own fault. After the United States withdrew from the ABM Treaty for 15 years, we did our best to bring the Americans back to these discussions about strategic stability. And we were able to achieve a few things. We've signed the New START Treaty in 2010 between Russia and the United States on further reductions of strategic offensive arms. Yet, when implementing these plans to build the global missile defense systems, all the agreements that we achieved as a part of the New START Treaty were undermined and devalued, because as the number of nuclear charges gets reduced, one party, namely the United States, increases the number of interceptor missiles, improve their characteristics, create new deployment areas for their interceptor missiles, and eventually, if we do nothing, Russia's nuclear potential will be fully undermined. They will be able to intercept all our ballistic missiles. And in spite of all our protests, the U.S. machine is working at full speed. The conveyor is running full speed. They've deployed missile defense systems in Alaska and California. As a result of NATO eastward expansion, they've set up new two areas in Romania and Poland. The range of interceptor missiles will keep growing. They have plans to deploy such missiles in Japan and South Korea. There is also a sea-based group of five cruisers and 30 destroyers deployed in the areas close to Russia. Without any exaggeration, I can say that they are working on this project at full speed. So what have we done apart from protesting and warning? How did Russia respond to this challenge? Here's what we did. After the United States withdrew from the ABM Treaty unilaterally, we've been working hard to create new promising weaponry systems. And this enabled us to make a big step forward, creating new strategic arms. U.S. global missile defense system is mainly against ballistic missiles. And ballistic missiles, this is the core of our nuclear deterrent, just like with other nuclear powers. This is why Russia has been developing a very modest price-wise, but extremely effective systems to defeat missile defense, and all our ICBMs are equipped with such system now. Also, we have developed a new generation of missiles. Namely, currently, the Defense Ministry works together with defense companies in the space industry, and they're testing a new missile system that uses a heavy ICBM. We called it Sarmat. This new system will replace the old Voivode system that we had during the Soviet period. And Voivode was considered a highly effective weapon. Our foreign partners even used a different name for it. But Sarmat is a much more powerful system. With a payload of 200 tons, it is hard to be intercepted by missile defense capabilities. The range of this new missile and the number of warheads is higher than with Voivode. Sarmat will be equipped with the hypersonic high-yield systems with capabilities for beating missile defense systems. This new system can be used under any conditions. Voivode had the range of 11,000 kilometers, and with Sarmat, with the new system, there is no range limitation. It can attack any target through the North Pole or through the via the South Pole. This is a powerful weapon, and no missile defense system will be able to withstand it. But even this is not the end. We've developed the new strategic weapons that don't use ballistic trajectory at all, which means that missile defense will be useless against it. This is what I'm going to tell you about now. This new kind of weapon, promising weapon systems that Russia has developed using new, unique technology designed by our engineers. One of such systems is a small, super powerful nuclear energy system that can be deployed in a cruise missile like X-101, a Russian missile, or U.S.-made Tomahawk missile, yet its range will be like 10 times higher, which means there is basically no limit to its range. It's a small missile with unlimited range and unpredictable trajectory that can avoid all intercept barriers, cannot be intercepted by existing or future missile defense systems. Late in 2017, at the central testing ground of the Russian Federation, we had a successful test launch of this newest cruise missile with the nuclear power energy unit. And it achieved altitude. Now, after the successful test, we can start manufacturing this new kind of weapon, a strategic nuclear weapon system with a missile carrying a nuclear power energy unit. As you understand, this is unheard of, and nobody else has such a system in the world. They may create something similar in the future, but by that time, our guys will come up with new ideas as well. Next, we all know that currently the whole world works actively on drones. We have unmanned submarines that move at ultra-deep levels intercontinentally with a speed that is much, much higher than the speed of modern submarines, torpedoes, and even the fastest surface ships. This is just fantastic.
Они обладают низкой шумностью, высокой маневренностью и практически неуязвимы для противника.
Средства, которые могут им противостоять,
на сегодняшний день в мире
просто не существует. Беспилотные
подводные аппараты могут быть оснащены как обычными, так и ядерными боеприпасами.
Subsurface vehicles. They can be equipped with conventional or nuclear weapons, attacking coastal defenses and infrastructure facilities.
In December 2017, we've completed testing this new innovative nuclear propulsion system
for this unmanned subsurface vehicle.
It's extremely small and at the same при объеме в 100 раз меньше, чем у установок современных атомных подводных лодок, имеет большую мощность. И в 10 раз меньше времени выхода на боевой режим. То есть на максимальную мощность. Результаты проведенных испытаний дали нам возможность приступить к созданию принципиально нового вида стратегического оружия, оснащенного ядерными боеприпасами большой мощности. Кстати, условные наименования этих двух новых
видов
стратегического оружия России,
крылатая
ракета глобальной дальности и беспилотного подводного аппарата пока не выбраны. Ждем предложений на сайте Министерства обороны.
We don't have the names for them yet, so you can send in your proposals to the website of the Defense Ministry.
Хорошо известно, что страна с высоким уровнем научного потенциала и передовыми технологиями, страны, активно разрабатывают так называемое гиперзвуковое оружие. Сверхзвуковая скорость измеряется, как известно, махами в честь австрийского ученого Эрнста Маха, который занимался исследованиями в этой области. Один мах — 1062 километра на высоте в час, на высоте 11 километров. Одна скорость звука — один мах. От 1 до 5 сверхзвук, от 5 больше — гиперзвук. Обладание таким оружием, безусловно, дает серьезные преимущества в сфере вооруженной борьбы. Его мощь, могущество, как говорят военные эксперты, могут быть огромными.
Military experts say
неуязвимым для сегодняшних систем ПРО и ПВО, поскольку противоракеты по-простому сказать, их просто не догоняют. В этой связи понятно, почему ведущие армии мира стремятся обладать таким идеальным на сегодняшний день оружием. Уважаемые друзья, у России такое оружие есть. Уже есть. Важнейшим этапом разработки современных систем вооружений стало создание высокоточного гиперзвукового авиационно-ракетного комплекса. Так же, как вы уже поняли, наверняка не имеющего мировых аналогов. Его испытания успешно завершены. И более того, с 1 декабря прошлого года комплекс приступил к несению опытно-боевого дежурства на аэродромах Южного военного округа. Уникальные летно-технические характеристики высокоскоростного самолета-носителя позволяют доставлять ракету в точку сброса за считанные минуты. При этом ракета, летящая с гиперзвуковой скоростью, превышающую скорость звука в 10 раз, еще и осуществляет маневрирование на всех участках траектории полета, что позволяет ей также гарантированно преодолевать все существующие и, я думаю, перспективные системы противовоздушной и противоракетной обороны, доставляя к цели на дальность более 2000 километров ядерные и обычные боезаряды. Мы назвали эту систему «Кинжал».
We gave this system the name of «Кинжал», «Dagger».
Но и это еще не все,
but
о чем я скажу
сегодня.
Настоящим технологическим прорывом является создание перспективного ракетного комплекса стратегического назначения с принципиально новым боевым оснащением, планирующим крылатым блоком, испытание которого также успешно
block, cruise block. We've successfully tested this new system as well.
Нашим американским и европейским партнерам-членам НАТО о том, что будем предпринимать необходимые меры для нейтрализации угроз, которые возникают для нас в связи с развертыванием глобальной
угрозы. Говорили об этом и в ходе переговоров, и даже публично.
Еще в 2004 году, после учения стратегических ядерных сил, в ходе которых впервые была испытана система, о которой я сейчас говорю, на встрече с прессой я сказал,
I said, I don't feel good quoting myself, but it would be appropriate today. I said
that as
the military potential of our
countries grows quantitatively and quantitatively,
Russia needs to have a new generation of weapons.
So
I'm pleased to inform you that after certain experiments we staged during these military exercises, which were successful, we are
sure that soon Russia будут поставлены новейшие технические комплексы, которые в состоянии поражать цели на межконтинентальной глубине с гиперзвуковой скоростью и высокой точностью, с возможностью глубокого маневра как по высоте, так и по курсу. Должен сказать, что в том, что только что прозвучало, каждое слово имеет значение. Таких систем вооружения в данный момент нет ни у одной страны мира. Конец цитаты.
Конечно,
каждое слово имеет значение, потому что речь шла именно о возможности обхода рубежей перехода. Для чего мы это все делали? Для чего мы это говорили? Мы не делали, как видите, никакой тайны из наших планов, а говорили об этом открыто и для того, чтобы прежде всего побудить наших партнеров к переговорам. Повторяю, это был 2004 год.
This was in 2004, like I said, amazing, but despite of all the difficulties that we faced over the years, economic and financial problems, problems with our defense industry, with our armed forces, Russia remains major nuclear power, but nobody wanted to talk to us seriously. They kept ignoring us. Nobody listened to us. So, listen to us now. Thank you.
Итак, от существующих типов боевого оснащения эта система отличается способностью совершать полеты в плотных слоях атмосферы на межконтинентальную дальность на гиперзвуковой скорости, превышающей число Маха более чем в 20 раз. При движении к цели планирующий крылатый блок, как я и говорил в 2004 году, осуществляет глубокое маневрирование, как боковое, причем на несколько тысяч километров, так и по высоте. Это делает его абсолютно неуязвимым. So altitude-wise, which makes it completely invulnerable for any missile defense systems. It uses new composite materials, which resolves the problem of
controlled
long-range
flight in plasma conditions. It goes like a meteorite towards its target, like a fireball.
Температура на поверхности изделия достигает 1600
temperature on the surface of this weapon reaches 2,000 degrees centigrade, and at the same time, it is still completely under control of the operator.
В силу понятных причин мы не можем сегодня показать истинный облик, истинный внешний вид этого изделия. Даже это сегодня имеет значение, серьезное значение. Думаю, всем это понятно. Но уверяю вас, все это есть в наличии и хорошо работает. Более того,
work very well.
Более того, предприятия промышленности России приступили к серийному производству этой системы. Этого еще одного нового вида стратегического оружия России. Мы назвали его «Авангард».
We gave this new system the name of Avangard.
Мы хорошо знаем и о том, что ряд государств работает над созданием перспективного оружия на новых физических принципах. Есть все основания полагать, что и здесь мы на шаг впереди. Во всяком случае, там, где нужнее всего. Так существенные результаты достигнуты в создании лазерного оружия. И это уже не просто теория или проекты, и даже не просто plans, начало производства.
And that's just the beginning stages of production. Last year, we started equipping our military units with combat laser systems. I won't go into details.
Но специалисты поймут,
be premature,
что наличие
but specialists know what I'm talking about. Such systems significantly augment Russia's military capabilities.
Для тех, кто интересуется военной техникой, также
хотел бы, I would suggest
попросил бы, чтобы они предложили название и этой новой техники. Я думаю,
навешиваем это.
Конечно, мы еще будем заниматься доводкой, развитием, совершенствованием наших новейших систем оружия. И, разумеется, я сегодня сказал далеко не обо всех наших
движениях и перспективных разработках,
но на сегодня достаточно. Особенно подчеркну. Особо
I would like to emphasize one thing in particular.
These
systems that we have developed and continue to develop these new strategic arms is not something we just inherited from the Soviet Union. Of course, we used some of the ideas that our predecessors developed during the Soviet period. But basically, all the things I told you about today are newest developments, things that we designed in just recent years. We had dozens of design bureaus and research centers working on these things quietly, calmly, without making a show. They worked hard for a number of years on these projects. Thousands of people. They all, just like our servicemen,
who formed valiantly in combat conditions, they are the true heroes.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. A party divided and without a clear message, Democrats face a fundamental dilemma. Move to the left and reach out to progressives and, in the process, alienate its donor base. Or continue business as usual. Aren't the Democrats tired of losing? Crosstalking the Democrats, I'm joined by my guest, Lionel, in New York. He is a legal analyst and a news decoder at LionelMedia.com. In Miami, we have Tim Canova. He is a law professor as well as a candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives in Florida's 23rd Congressional District. And in Los Angeles, we have Ron Placone. He's a comedian, a frequent guest on The Jimmy Dore Show and The Young Turks, as well as host of his own streaming show, Get Your News On with Ron. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Tim, let me go to you because I think you're for going on a noble task in running for Congress as a Democrat here. I'd like to start out as the kind of the Democrat on this program. What is ailing the party the most? We have Dianne Feinstein in California. The party there decided not to back her. That's really quite interesting. But then we have people like Pelosi that will never go away, Schumer who will never go away, and they can't take credit for any kind of policy victory, electoral victory. Except for, well, people like to put money in their wallet. Is that really the litmus test of being a good Democrat today? Go ahead, Tim.
Well, I'll tell you, I do think that this is what is ailing the party, is there's just too much corporate money and corporate influence in the party. It gets in the way of Democrats legislating effectively when they are in power, and it undercuts their support when they are running for office. So I think the influence of big money, corporate money on the Democratic Party has been insidious. And it seems like the party has two missions, a primary mission and a secondary mission. The primary mission is literally to prevent progressives from prevailing in primaries, from being the Democratic candidates in November. The secondary mission is to defeat Republicans in November if they can, but it's only secondary. The most important objective for this party establishment is to make sure it remains a corporate-dominated party, and that, unfortunately, U.S. policies across the board reflect those corporate agendas. Yeah.
That's why we have Ron on the program here. You know, the Republicans love corporate money in Wall Street, too, so let's get that over with, okay? But we got Ron here, and Ron is the progressive.
That is
true. I watch Ron on Jimmy Dore all the time. I suggest our viewers do that. Fantastic stuff here. And it's Ron is part of the cadre that will not let the corporatists continue as business as usual. Ron, in Los Angeles.
Well, you know, I don't know how much I can do just as an individual. But, yeah, I mean, I think Tim summed it up perfectly. They are driven by their donors, and they use that donor money and they're influenced by that. And then it kind of infiltrates the way they go about policy. They have this agenda where they have to remain donor-friendly, and they'll do the mental gymnastics necessary to not start talking about the issues people want to hear about because it disrupts their donors, i.e. single-payer health care, i.e. tuition-free college, a jobs program, a Green New Deal. The list goes on and on and on. So with this donor-friendly approach, you know, when people are given a choice between a Republican and a Republican, typically they're just going to go with the Republican. And that's what we've been seeing a lot of. And then when people run on unapologetically progressive platforms, i.e. Lee Carter in Virginia, they win, even when they just ignore the establishment advice, the Democratic establishment advice. And then, you know, using another contemporary example, over in Georgia, you had John Ossoff, who had a very winnable district, had an intense amount of money poured into his campaign, and lost even worse than Hillary Clinton did, because he ran on absolutely nothing and just had a bunch of empty platitudes. So it's kind of obvious that there's a lot of unrest amidst people, and that the status quo that the Democrats have tried out for so long is just not working anymore at
all. Well, absolutely. I mean, since 2010, Democrats have lost 1,000 seats across the country. Barack Obama's most endearing legacy, I would say. Lionel, you know, speaking of Barack Obama, you still have this cadre at the top, these elites here. I mean, I don't even see them as Democrats. I just see them as really, it's just living corruption, okay? They're not policy-driven. They don't care about the middle class. As a matter of fact, they abhor the middle class. And they go for everybody else. That's why I'm really sick and tired of this identity politics. They think it's going to work. It doesn't work, okay? It hasn't worked for 8 years for the Democrats, but they won't change. Lionel, also known as Fella on this program. Lionel, go ahead.
There are no Democrats. They don't exist. They're breathtakingly incoherent. They're schizoid. I don't know what they stand for. Hillary Clinton was the worst infection, this fetid, feculent contamination of a once noble policy, because there was something called liberalism and progressives. What does she stand for? She's the anti-Trump. And I got news for you. The Republicans don't exist either. This left-right illusion, this paradigm is a joke. So if you think that it's just Democrats, it's not. If you ask anybody running for $25,000 in a new car, what the hell do you stand for? What are you about? They can't tell you. They talk about progressives and liberals. And look at Bernie Sanders before they castrated him and removed his vertebra. It's done. It's finished. It's over. It's a joke. This is theoretical nonsense. All right, this is Ted Baxter media taking over. We are divided into two parties in this country, Trump and anti-Trump. That's it.
Okay, well, Tim, you know, running for Congress, I mean, what is the disconnect between the constituents that you want to vote for you and the party that you represent? I mean, is there any overlap here? Because the more I look at the data, what people are actually interested in is just, it's not mentioned in the media, it's not mentioned by party leaders. There's such a disconnect between the two. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, you're right. It is like a different conversation. The party elites inside the Beltway, there's one conversation going on. But in the district, in my district and all around the country, average people, the ordinary citizen, has far different concerns than what you hear when you turn on whatever cable show you're going to watch, whether it's MSNBC or Fox, inside the Beltway chatter. You know, folks have the same kind of problems everywhere around this country right now, which is concerns about putting food on the table, paying their bills, their health care bills, sending their kids to college. If you're college kids, it's a concern about your future and where you're going to be even living. You know, 18 to 34 year olds are still more likely to be living with their folks, with their parents than on their own. This is an unforgiving economy. You know, the official unemployment rate is a real fantasy. And people are really hurting and struggling, and they want candidates and they want parties that are going to speak to their real needs. And that is not happening at the level of the establishment. You know, the Nancy Pelosi's and Chuck Schumer's, they really are beholden to the donor class. Yep. People get elected to Congress and they're told if you want to be on a certain committee, you've got to raise hundreds of thousands of dollars for the party. And the way to raise it is to call these CEOs who could contribute to you to be on a certain committee. And this is a way that government gets captured by those special interests.
That sounds like corruption to me.
And just to reiterate.
Let me go to Ron here in Los Angeles. You know, Ron, explain to me, because I really don't get it, why it's like Stockholm syndrome. Why can't they get away from Clinton and her clan, her, because it seems to me that they're obsessed with this here. I mean, for someone that lost, you know, ran twice, lost in the most embarrassing way to a reality TV show host, okay, but we still keep hearing from her, and her words continue to be echoed. I mean, just go away. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest, though, this isn't a popular sentiment, but I wanted to buy Hillary Clinton's book. That was until I found out it wasn't a choose-your-own-adventure. I thought had they gone that direction with it, it would have been interesting, you know? Like, it would have been like, to blame the DNC, go to page 12. To blame Bernie for the third time, go to page 26, you know? For self-reflection, you got to get a different book. But I think they don't have any interest in doing that, Peter. I think Tim nailed their priorities. Tim's absolutely right. Their first priority is to prevent a progressive takeover of the party, which that's the one thing they're actually good at doing. Their second priority is maybe beating the Republicans. And as Lionel pointed out, which Lionel, you're being like way too subtle here, buddy. You gotta be a little more aggressive. But as Lionel pointed out, the only message they really have is, hey, we're not Trump. Their only message is, hey, we're not Trump. And when you give people something, like, you have to give people something to vote for.
Right.
When the only thing you give people is something to vote against, like, hey, what do you stand for? Well, we're not that other guy. I wouldn't do that in comedy. Like no other job would people do that. Like, I wouldn't be like, hey, I'm a comedian. Oh, what's your comedy like? Maybe I want to come see you. Well, do you like Carrot Top? I'm not a big Carrot Top fan. Well, I'm not Carrot Top. I'm totally not Carrot Top. And that was just the first comedian that popped into my head.
No offense, but that's not a good reason.
No one else does that in any other job. You say what you're for.
Exactly. Lionel, jump in there. I mean, but this hatred of Trump by the Democrats, it seems to me that it's just bouncing the rubble. I mean, people have already decided one way or another. They like the president or they don't. They have had for a long time. OK, the Democrats constantly going after his personality, which I don't like sometimes. OK, but I'm interested in policy, not personal attacks. And that's all the Democrats have in their arsenal. Go ahead, Lionel.
I'm going to give them some advice, and because I'm neither. I'm apolitical and a political atheist, and I think it's just a joke. But if I had to advise them, pick three things, very simple concepts. I don't care what they are. Just pick something. And if you don't believe in it, lie. Just tell people three simple things. I want to make America safer. I want to return jobs and health care. I don't care. More protein in your diet. Just say something. Because what have we heard so far? Up till now, we have heard every single day that Hillary Clinton threw what happened. Or as Desi Arnaz would say, what happened? She wrote a book, basically is blaming now Russians and Bernie to an extent. And we have spent, with the complicity of and aided and abetted by this Ted Baxter sock puppet media,
Lionel,
which basically answers
Lionel, let me jump
her.
In here. I have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on the Democrats. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.
Okay, Tim, since I work in media and I have to cover what the media covers, let's talk about Russia, Russia, Russia. I mean, how does that move forward the mainstream Democratic Party? I mean, that's all you hear about. It's MSNBC is hard to watch for me. It's unwatchable now because that's all you hear about. And I'm not interested in that because no one has showed me any evidence whatsoever. OK, if there's evidence, then let's talk about what it means. But we don't have any evidence. How does this Russia conspiracy story that the media are just so captivated with, how does that move the Democratic Party forward after 8 years of losing seats in huge numbers over the last 8 years? Go ahead, Tim, in Miami.
Again, I think the Russia narrative, if there's some evidence there, it would be best if Congress had televised hearings and the American people could learn what actually happened. But I think the whole Russia conspiracy narrative puts things very out of proportion. 90 million Americans didn't vote in the last presidential election. Those are the voters that Democrats have to be trying to re-engage and get them into the political process. And the Russian narrative just is not going to do that. I think it's a failing strategy, first of all. When you take a look at what does the media concentrate on? Fine, they're concentrating a lot on that narrative. What are they missing? What are they not reporting on? I can tell you just here in South Florida, we wanted to verify the votes in our last election when I ran against Debbie Wasserman Schultz in 2016. And we had to sue the supervisor of elections of Broward County. While the lawsuit was pending, they destroyed all of the ballots in our election. And the media, you know, not a peep, not a word about it. So the media itself here has a lot of corporate priorities, and it's to really prop up a lot of these establishment Democrats. And that's what makes it very frustrating and difficult.
I know your story. Why did they destroy those ballots?
They haven't given much of an adequate explanation. Oh. And they destroyed those ballots in violation of federal law. And they certified, when they destroyed the ballots, they certified that the ballots were not the subject of a pending lawsuit. And indeed, they were. I had sued the supervisor of elections to try to see these ballots. So the whole idea that you need paper ballots to verify the vote, they just ignore that. They ignored federal law. We're waiting to see what the consequences are. We're demanding a federal investigation and calling on the governor to remove the supervisor of elections. And meanwhile, the Democratic Party establishment all throughout Florida has been just amazingly quiet.
Yeah.
You'd think that they would be concerned when ballots in a Democratic primary are destroyed.
Okay, well, let me go to Ron. I suppose it was some Russian bot that ordered the destruction of those ballots. I mean, given the media environment we live in, that's a logical assumption to make. Go ahead, Ron.
Well, you know, I had no idea that 13 Twitter trolls were so effective. And ever since I learned that, I have been on Craigslist trying to hire a handful of folks to get me a Netflix special. I figured if they can throw an election, certainly they can help me out. But no, I mean, Tim, I'm glad that what Tim's been going through has gotten brought up because, sadly, that's not really a unique story within the Democratic establishment. Tim's not the only person going through this kind of stuff. You mentioned Nancy Pelosi. Her opponent, Stephen Jaffe, kind of got mishandled by the establishment. He's going through something similar, not ballot destruction, but a similar corrupt, for instance. The Nurses Association, when they tried to give single payer to the state of California, the establishment found a way to hijack them. This is sadly a very, very common story, and it's usually aimed at progressives. So getting back to the topic, kind of making it full circle here, by hyper-amplifying the Russian narrative 24/7, which is barely an embellishment of what the corporate media is doing, by the way. I mean, there's been Harvard studies done on this stuff. They talk about it at a minimum about 75% of the time. And most of the public is totally sick of hearing about it. It avoids them from talking about what's really going on in the system. And what's going on is that the system is rigged to the donor class. We have one party, and it's the money party. And it's kind of beyond repair at this point.
You know, Lionel, it's interesting. We look at Tim's experience there and what Ron just said there. It just seems that the forces that threaten democracy are internal. And it seems if we go from Bernie Sanders to Tim's case here, you know, it's systemic. OK. And this is what's really dangerous here. I mean, you know, I've followed Ron for a while now, and I watch his podcasts and all that, you know, and it's really refreshing to hear, you know, kind of a nuts and bolts, you know, straight shooting progressive. I mean, I'm conservative, but I can listen to that. There's a dialogue. Ron and I can have a dialogue. But in the media, I never see that kind of dialogue. And I never see Democrats in dialogue ever. I mean, change the subject, pivot here, pivot there. Never get a straight answer for them. Go ahead, Lionel.
If you can't beat Debbie Wasserman Schultz,
yeah.
If this cup can't beat Debbie Wasserman Schultz, If my native state of Florida, if you even have to say anything, if you don't say hi, I'm not Debbie Wasserman
Schultz. No pressure on you, Tim. No pressure on you, Tim.
Then Florida deserves. But Florida
Lionel, may I interrupt?
What about her history?
Go ahead, Tim. Go ahead.
Tim, I think you found yourself a new hype man.
Last time around.
One more time, Tim. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, nobody even knew who I was. I said we ran a great campaign last time. Nobody even knew who I was when I jumped into the race. We ran for less than 8 months. 90 days before the election, we were down 60 points in the polls, and we almost took her at the finish line. And who knows what the actual outcome was in light of the destruction of all these ballots? We're not sure. That's a closed primary at the end of August
what
where only registered Democrats can vote. Not much of anything. And, you know,
what is she,
I do think her days are very much numbered. I think we're good.
Well, I suppose, gentlemen, I think Debbie can say I'm the most investigated congressperson in the current Congress. I mean, I think that might be true. OK, I mean, there's a special jail cell for her. Definitely. Really. You know, I'll send her oranges.
Did
it's Florida, after
read,
all.
Did anybody read?
Go ahead, Peter, I've got to say this goes way beyond the problems.
Go ahead, Tim.
The problems go way beyond Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And the problems go way beyond Debbie Wasserman Schultz. You know, the system itself has so many problems. Just take a look at the present debates about the mass shootings at the schools. You know, most members of the House of Representatives are in safe districts because of gerrymandering. They're either a safe Democrat or a safe Republican. So it allows them to sing to the choir, to their base, without any real discussion between the parties. You decried the fact that there's not real debate, there's not real discussion to arrive at solutions anymore. Well, you know, a Republican can say the problem is all mental health, and the Democrats can say it's only guns, whereas the problem really is a bit of both, and both need to be addressed. And you take a look at what Capitol Hill is doing. They don't hold legislative hearings on these or other issues because they're too busy spending 30 hours a week dialing for dollars, calling up their donors and trying to raise money to run their campaigns. This is not a legislative branch that legislates in any meaningful way anymore. And it certainly is not representing the people of this country.
OK, Ron, you know, I'm talking to Tim before the program. You know, he said he may be considering running as an independent. You know, Ron, isn't it really time for progressives to reach out to independents? I mean, why don't you just give up on the Democrats? I mean, it's just a swamp. I mean, why don't you guys make that big move? Because I think the country needs it. 90 million people didn't vote. I wonder why. OK, and that's a rhetorical question. Why doesn't it happen, Ron?
I'm with you in the same question, really. I mean, I was at the Convergence conference where we presented Bernie Sanders with the signatures to start a new party. I wish he would have done it. But, you know, you run into questions of ballot access and stuff like that and just the whole restructuring of a party. So I understand there's some complications. I understand how some people are choosing Dem Enter as opposed to Dem Exit. However, you have to look at all the kind of roadblocks in our path, everything from, you know, gerrymandering to superdelegates, et cetera, et cetera. And you kind of think there's a lot of us. There's a lot of us that kind of want the same things, that kind of have some very big principles in common. And if we all kind of somehow could mobilize, we would be a real great political force to be reckoned with. And, you know, hijacking the Democratic Party is a very long road. It's not impossible. Starting a new viable party, also long road, but not impossible. You know, as an individual, I'm more about just policies and movements myself. But I don't care what's next to your name.
But Ron,
if you're for the policies I'm for and you got the right principles, I'll give you a vote, you know.
Yeah, but I think that's Lionel. Well, I think, you know, Ron's on to something because maybe it's just, you know, by accident here. I think all of us here are far more interested in policy than personalities. Weigh in on that. Lionel, go ahead.
I'm listening to this with all due respect. This is the most insipid, unexciting message. There's too much corporate money, and I came in the last minute. Do you know how Trump won? He beat everyone. He came out like a bull in a china shop.
Because he had a message, Lionel. I'm agreeing with you, Lionel. He had a message.
Because he had a message.
He had a
message. And he had personality. He had personality, and he didn't think that just this rehashing, this insipid, vapid dribble.
He had a message. He had a message that the system was rigged.
People.
Yeah, the system was rigged. But you can't. Okay, Lionel, I agree with you in many ways, but you can't govern that way. That's the problem. That's what I'm getting at here. Okay, you can get elected that way, but it's difficult to govern.
Yeah, you can.
Well,
you can.
The jury's still out on that.
Well, you know what? He's in and she's not. So he did something right. But let me tell you something.
All right,
there's this
Lionel,
kind of
I got to jump. I got to jump in here.
We've
run out of time. Fascinating discussion, guys. Many thanks to my guests in New York, Miami, and in Los Angeles. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk rules.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, Community Public Radio. I'm your host, Don DeBar.